Welcome back, Chelsea fans, to an emergency episode of the Romans Empire podcast. My name is Zach, and as always, I am joined by my two trusty co-hosts, Andres and Sam, but I'm not going to forget our little catchphrase this time. This is the Romans Empire podcast, where all we do is talk shit about Chelsea and the board. This is a Romans Empire podcast where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else.
No, I think you were right.
And in
the
this
first
episode,
time.
We are including Chelsea's board as part of the shit talking because I think there's a little bit of blame to be had there. But before we get into that, I mean, guys, what are your initial feelings, initial emotions?
Hold on.
What's kind of going through your mind?
Before we go into this, I need to preface this episode by letting the listeners know that you two actually recorded an episode last night without me, recapping the Luton Town matchup and whatever nonsense you guys talked about. And I'm the one who's responsible for editing and posting the episodes. And I simply forgot to post it last night after I got home. But you guys should be thanking me because it would have lost relevancy within like 3 hours after posting it after Frank got sacked. So you're welcome, guys. Honestly, I saved you some embarrassment.
You want to know the best part about me and Andres recording yesterday is at the very end of the episode. Do you remember what I said, Andres? One of the last remarks I made was like,
Frank
will
never get sacked.
I'm like, you know, I guess Frank didn't get sacked, and it looks like he might not be now because, you know, why would they?
Right.
After, you know, the FA Cup match.
Hey,
good thing we didn't post it because I would have looked like a jackass. And everybody who thought we're insiders would have, like, known that we're definitely not insiders.
No, I'm an insider. I said it. They want to give him one last game to end on a good note. Luton Town, they won. You know, like if he was sacked after the Leicester City match, he would have ended on bad terms. But he goes out with a win. What an honorable tenure he had with us. Credit to me.
Sam, I want to give you credit, but something tells me that quarantine rules in the pandemic probably had to do with this, because everything I read today said that Lampard said his goodbyes after Leicester. And then everything was supposed to be done and dusted after that. So
what quarantine rules? What do you mean? With who?
I feel like Tuchel had to quarantine when he came to London.
No, there's an exception for athletes, and they don't have to quarantine. He's with them.
There's a new rule that came about during COVID. But
I think that there's an exception now because of athletes, because I mean, think about it. They were traveling for Champions League and they came back and they played like a couple days later. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I'm all right. I'm just trying to defend myself. You could be right, Andreas, for all I know, but I choose to believe that I was correct. But I after the Luton Town match, though, I was on the same page as you, Zach. Like, maybe he's not gone after all. But I wasn't too shocked by it. Going back to what you asked about my initial feelings, wasn't too shocked about it. Obviously upsetting, but, you know, I have had time to process it because I think I kind of accepted, you know, we were very late on like accepting the fact that Frank probably shouldn't remain as our manager the rest of the season. Like, up until that Leicester match, we were still on the board with, you know, wait it out, like, it's not fair, we had a 3-year plan, you know, you can't give up a year and a half, like, we want some continuity with the club, like, you know, just not the same old Chelsea bringing in a manager and he's out within 2 years. Like, we were all on that, but I think at the end of the day, and we're going to go into the article written by The Athletic, it kind of confirmed a lot of our beliefs as far as what the players felt was the problem with Frank, his lack of instructions to the players. I think that played a huge role in it. his inability to adapt, his inability to communicate with the players. That was eye-opening, to say the least, but also just, like, really confirmed a lot of our suspicions that we hoped weren't true, but actually were true. What did you think, Andreas?
I mean, yeah, the article for me kind of confirmed what we thought was happening based on just the play in the field, right? We thought, how can we only be – the only obvious instruction on here be that the fullbacks need to be high and that's it. Like, how can that be the only plan? And I know the article focused more about the players who may be on the periphery, who are trying to get advice on how to get back on the pitch. But if those guys aren't getting any instruction – I highly doubt that even the players that are on the pitch are going to get any instruction, since it now is confirmed that Lampard had his favorites and was just going to play them no matter what. So, Zach, I don't know if that just kind of confirms kind of what we have been discussing to you as well, because, yeah, it sounds like Lampard was telling the boys to just go out there and give it their best, and that's as far as the blackboard, whiteboard, however you want to call it, chat went.
By the way, for our listeners, if it sounds like Andreas is talking in an empty room right now, it's because he's talking in an empty room right now, right? Like, he just moved into a new apartment and has no furniture, so that's why it sounds like that. Correct.
My apologies. I'm still in the process of moving. I'm hoping to get my couches in later this week, and hopefully that'll kill some of this echo.
Let's hope so. No, I'm just kidding. Zach, sorry, cut you off.
No, it's all good. That section of the article was probably the most alarming to me. Probably the one that stood out the most as well. Because, you know, you read through it and you see all of these, like, some people are going to call them accusations. I mean, this is as reputable of a source as you can get without the club actually confirming it. And this was probably the most believable part of that whole article, because you look at their performances themselves and they just kind of explain everything you need to know about his halftime talks. And we always kind of sat here and questioned, you know, what he says in the dressing room or what kind of direction he's giving to players. And I don't think it's as simple as Frank just kind of goes out there and tells those guys, hey, do your thing. Or Mason, you're going to play the eight. Do your thing. Like, there's a little bit more direction than that, of course. But I think the real issue lies in the actual preparation for the matches. You know, we always talk about patterns of play and how there just never seems to be a go-to. There never seems to be a style or a type of play or a run of play. Nothing that we seem to go to in times of panic or when we need something or when we need a goal. And that's obvious, man. I mean, there's really just not much to say about that besides it's terrible. And the thing is, and this is what I'm most confused about, and I'm sorry if I sound like I'm at a loss for words, it's because I am. But the most confusing part about all of this is the fact that, you know, this accusation in particular, the halftime talks, the team talks weren't good enough, there wasn't enough direction. Frank was a player for how long? And he played at the highest level for how long? So at what point do you kind of... To what extent do you actually believe that Frank isn't giving these guys direction is, I guess, what I'm trying to ask for you. Because I'm trying to wrap my mind around it, and I just kind of can't. I really can't. I look at their performances, and they look disjointed. They look shattered. And like I said, there doesn't look to be anything cohesive there. You can't look at our performances and say, okay, we've clearly been working on this. Because we haven't. I think the only thing you could really say that with is set pieces.
See, I'm pretty sure that this was mentioned in the article, but this is also obvious. Like, this is something that we had mentioned when there were rumors in the past couple weeks about certain players voicing out their frustration. There's going to be this on every team. Players who aren't being played, being frustrated with the manager and the lack of playing time. Like, you know, so yeah, you have to take
the guys that aren't playing.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to take all of these comments with that understanding that if there's quotes about a player thinking that Frank wasn't this, wasn't that, just know that it's very likely that the player was not happy with his playing time, his situation, and that's just, you know, that's just inherent in the sport of football and just managing a team. But the beginning of the article,
I do want to butt in just one more thing on that point. And Andres, I'm curious to kind of hear your take on it, because yeah. I mean, I know Sam has played, but you and I have played, you know, a lot longer. We've been around more like dressing room type atmosphere. So,
wow. Okay. I mean, wow. Way to discredit my career, man.
I'm not discrediting you whatsoever. But Andres, I mean, like, when you're getting direction from a coach or a manager or whatever, there's that open line of communication, right? They give you a direction. Hey, you need a, let's say it's you need to hug the sideline more in possession. Okay, mm-hmm. Coach, if I have a question about that, we're having a back and forth. I'm asking you why it is that you want me to be out there. You're explaining it, X's and O's, and we're kind of having that back and forth just so we both have that understanding. Now, Frank Lampard fielded 17 different front threes since he became manager of Chelsea. So what I'm saying is, all of these guys that aren't getting the playing time and all of the guys who are getting chopped and changed in and out of the starting 11, those periphery players, I guess you can kind of say, when Frank does give them direction, do you think those guys really want to listen? I mean, they've been in and out of the team for the last God knows how long.
But
they really don't know their place. No. I know you have to. There's a certain responsibility on the player's part, of course. I'm not discounting that whatsoever. But the fact of the matter is, they're divas. So you have to be able to manage that and manage those kind of personality. And for me, I just saw a complete mismanagement of some of those personalities. I'm not talking about Kepa. I thought the whole Kepa part was bullshit. We'll get to that later. But I'm talking more specifically about what I saw today on Twitter with Kovacic was disgraceful. Like, especially with guys like Antonio Rudiger too. Of course, if you're Rudiger, you would be pissed off if you weren't getting playing time. You got playing time under the last two managers, and you're not really sure why you're not under this one. You know, granted, you didn't have the greatest season last year. You didn't get a shot to start this season. And then when he did start getting his chances, Frank just kind of kept him in the starting lineup and axed Zuma randomly out of nowhere. My whole thing, Andres, is, you know, should that have been managed better by Frank? Just kind of letting them know, this is my long-term plan. This is what I want to do this, but there are going to be chops and changes in the meantime. I feel like that wasn't communicated to the players. No, I just want to hear.
Of course. And again, you don't just go to a player and be like, hey, you're not going to play. Like, you have to give constructive criticism. You're not playing because A, B, and C. And I think that's what the biggest frustration, it seems, through the articles that we've seen today, is what these players had, whether it was Jorginho or Kovacic or whoever it was that was complaining about it. You're right. You need to know, hey, what do I need to work on? This is my job. And if my boss isn't telling me how I can do my job better, then how am I supposed to keep back to where I want to be? Yeah. And exactly. And keep your job. So I understand that people are calling for these people's heads, like, oh my God, how dare they? Da 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 da. But honestly, I think that's a fair complaint. Your boss is supposed to be your guide as to how you can do something better. Mm-hmm. And I think that you talk about, like, oh, why would they listen? That's why they listen. These players are looking for it. That's why they're complaining. It's like, okay, so you're telling me that no matter what I do, let's say I'm Alonso or Emerson, nothing I can do will put me in front of Chilwell. Like, that doesn't seem fair. Or Kovacic, nothing I do will put me in front of Kai or Mount. Again, that doesn't seem constructive at all. And it's just shocking, because you already knew going into this season, once the transfer window ended, that you were going to have a lot of players. Mm-hmm. And part of your job is managing the locker room, because that, if you don't, that leaks into practice, then you don't get enough effort out of practice. And then that means you don't get enough effort out of the game. And again, mm-hmm. you mentioned it. if he's not even having these conversations with these guys at practice, how the hell – this just makes everything make way more sense. The moment our starting 11 got hurt, part A, B, and C, that's why the 17-game winning streak ended, because those 11 players were the only ones Frank spoke to.
Well, we had a midfield three of Kovacic, Conte, and Mount that was unchanged. You know, we had a front three of Tammy, Werner, and Ziyech, which was unchanged.
And the back five was unchanged as well.
And the back five, yeah. So once we brought them in, I mean, there was stability.
Ziyech goes down. Pulisic goes down. Conte or Kovacic, one of them went down. It's just Ziyech gets out of form. Then the changes all start coming. And how the hell are those guys supposed to do anything? That's my thing. It's we talk about how in Liverpool and in Man City and hell, even Manchester United at times, these players come in and they know exactly what to do. And it's like, wow, Mason Greenwood had quite a game. Or to use Liverpool, Shaqiri in a midfield three. When in the world were we even going to hear that?
Or how about like 2 weeks ago, Eric Bailly comes back from the dead and all of a sudden he looks like Man United's best center back again. It's those kind of things. I mean, I'm looking at his staff also as well. Like, I just kind of want to put it out there. When we say Frank, we're also referring to the staff as well, because they're obviously in his ear. But I do think those coaches and those managers do have something that they can lean on. They have other footballing, more experienced footballing minds that they could lean on, I guess, in that sense. Like, you cannot tell me Solskjaer isn't getting whispers in his ear from Sir Alex. Hey, here's a little tip for you, managing tip. But you're not going to soak that in. And I guess that's kind of the thing is it just – I mean, Frank did bring his whole – pretty much his whole Derby staff here. I know there was a lot of talk about the whole Shea Given thing, about how that could have possibly upset Frank. And, you know, that was another coach he wanted to bring in, and it didn't wind up working out. But – you know, the fact that you throw the extra monkey wrench of COVID into the equation didn't make things easier for the board or for Frank. I think that goes without saying, because in any other year, we're able to get rid of some of that dead weight, like the Jorginhos, like the Rudigers. You know, if Tomori really was going to be leaving, he wouldn't have left in January. We probably could have got rid of him a little earlier. You know, a lot of that dead weight would have been gone, and that probably would have alleviated.
But before we can get away from Tomori, he was going to be sold. It wasn't even going to be a loan. The article reports that Lampard was going to sell him. It was going to be an asset for cash.
Yeah, yeah. And they were going to turn it around for Tarkowski and Declan Rice.
Apparently Tarkowski was going to be our next center back, instead of a young prospect out of our academy.
Yeah, but
this is what it comes down to at the end of the day. This is what it comes down to at the end of the day. The board, Frank, and the players were never on the same page. Frank, this whole time, coming into this season, kept on repeating that we're not going to win the league this year. We're not going to compete in Champions League. Like, this is a year for us to learn and to grow and to build. And he went into this year trying things out. And I think he knew that there was a chance that he wouldn't finish top four, but it would be okay for 1 year. I mean, obviously the hope is to get there, but you know, it was a 3-year thing. And with the board, they had just spent all this money on two young world talents, and Frank was not getting the best out of them at all. So it made them look like, and this, out of all the players that they brought in, the only player that Frank wanted was Ben Chilwell. The rest were handpicked by the board, I'm sure. They were on different pages after all of these transfers. Mm-hmm. They saw them going somewhere directly this year, and Frank thought it was going to be a long-term thing. And clearly, the fact that Frank is a Chelsea legend had a lot to do with it. You know, going through the article, like, he got a bad deal. He was getting paid significantly less than other managers were, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that he gave the discount because it's Chelsea. You know, if this was any other situation over the summer, he would have walked. That's what the article said too. But because it's Chelsea and he has a connection to it, he wanted to try to ride it out and make things work. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's all Frank's fault and, you know, he wasn't able to get...
I thought the article... Did I misread that? I swore the article said that the board was considering walking away from Lampard, not the other way around.
No, I thought the board I read that Lampard was willing to walk away at the end of last summer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because of what I said. Like,
it said that
going,
the board was considering that since Lampard... Yeah, I guess I misunderstood. I thought that it said that the board thought, oh, we're going to do a different job or we're going to look at a different coach, but Lampard got us top four and a final spot. Therefore, moving him at this point made no sense. That's how I read the article.
Where did I find it?
Oh, here it is. It says Lampard would have walked out had he been working for any other club than Chelsea.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Just because.
But didn't the club at the same time say that they couldn't? They were. It's like both people were stuck. Right. Lampard with nostalgia, and the club was also like, well, shit, we're stuck here. We can't make a move without pissing off the fan base.
It definitely went both ways. I mean, that's. And this is something that we all anticipated at the hiring because his status as a legend at the club. I swear to God, we talked about this like the day he got that the day we signed him. If things went wrong, it would be uncomfortable to try to get rid of him because of his legend, his status at the club. And right. it went both ways. You're absolutely right. The club was probably wanting to move on to something. Like I don't even know what is the solution at this point. They want to bring in Tuchel. I mean, they're going to bring him in. I don't know enough about him to be completely honest to make an opinion, but it seems like their checklist of who to bring in is someone who speaks German first and foremost, as if speaking the native tongue of a player is what really gets the best out of him. But I mean, again, we did talk about this previously, just his connection with a lot of different players, but. I don't know. Maybe the board has a little bit of like more blame than I previously thought for setting up this situation.
They should be blamed. To an extent, of course. Frank shouldn't have been hired when he got hired. It's that simple. It was too early. It wasn't the right time. And I don't think anyone could argue that.
That's what I meant to say. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just a matter of fact. And I think we're all in agreement there that and you know, when it did happen, yes, we were all excited. And yes, we were, you know, celebrating because one of our club legends is coming back. And we all kind of fell into the thirst trap of like, this needs to work. this is too good of a situation for it not to work, you know. And we didn't really want to think of the sad reality, which is when it goes sour, because it's gonna go sour, everything goes sour eventually at Chelsea. When it goes sour, what's gonna happen? And now that we're finally here, I think it's all kind of hitting us.
But Zach, when he took the job, it wasn't a good situation. We had just lost Eden Hazard. We had the transfer ban. So going into it, like Frank had a really tough task.
He also knew.
Yeah, like of course, you know, it was not just like hiring Frank, who's not very experienced. It's hiring Frank who's not very experienced to handle this very rough time. He did a good job last season.
I know he did.
So I don't know. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, if you're Frank Lampard and Chelsea calls you and offers you the job, I don't even ask what the fucking terms are. I say, okay, just like Frank did, taking $4 million less a season than the last manager. That's my point. Frank is never going to turn this job down. And you know, the article kind of alluded to, he had other lucrative offers, which I'm sure he did. His season at Derby was decent. It wasn't great. It was sixth place by like 1 point above seventh, I think. They barely qualified for the playoffs, but still, he had a rap sheet of developing young players. So in a way, you see where the club was going. Okay, we got all these young academy products. We just lost Eden Hazard. There's going to be a ton of playing time for these kids. we saw what Frank Lampard did with Mason Mount and Fikayo Tomori, and even like even the other young guys on that Derby team, like even Harry Wilson, for example, who had a who had like a sort of a breakout season. He got a Premier League loan the next year because of it.
Eight different academy players made their debut under Frank.
Yeah, like that, which is huge.
No other Chelsea manager has ever done anything like that. And, dude, I really wish that we were able to foresee this earlier on, because it would have made it a lot easier to stomach. But if it weren't for the success last year, I wouldn't have had so much hope coming into this year. And it really
was it naive, yeah. though? Was it naive of the board to hire Frank with the transfer ban and all the youth? Two seasons ago, coming into the job, it's naive to say, okay, this guy's perfect for now, but
that's exactly
but
who what gives a fuck what's though.
Gonna but they didn't think, well, what's gonna happen a year from now when we're ready to spend $250 million plus. Now all of a sudden this inexperienced manager that only had one season in the championship is gonna be expected to win the Premier League?
No, time out. But you're making it seem as if like Chelsea was going to be the most fun job ever for any manager. We were not in the position we are today where we can call whichever manager and say, look at the squad we have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a year ago? We
exactly. So it's not naive of the board. The board was literally back against the wall. We just came off of a coach who completely was hated by the fan base. Add on top of that now the transfer ban minus Eden Hazard. Nobody wants to be the Chelsea manager. Nobody is secure enough to be a Chelsea manager with a transfer ban. So I think it's not that it's naive. I think they thought, okay, Lampard, here's your tasks. Like, yes, he had the project and whatnot, but get the academy players minutes because that's all we can do. Oh, and here's some money. And of course, they took advantage of the nostalgia. In a business sense, they did everything right because Lampard overachieved in that first season. And now we have one of the strongest teams on paper in the Premier League. Now, Lampard turns out didn't have the quality. And because of his high accomplishments, they were still with their backs against the wall as to keeping him. I think they did the correct thing by getting Lampard in the way the board had to think in the moment. I just think long term, it was always destined for failure because Lampard didn't have the merit and the pedigree as a coach on his own to earn that spot. But yeah, I don't think the club did anything wrong.
Another thing to consider is maybe at the time they did think it would be a slower process, but how are they supposed to account for what would happen with COVID? And you have to admit that without this crisis, I don't think there's any chance that we would have signed the Kai Havertz and Timo Werner, because the other buyers were not in a position to buy and the sellers were in a position to make money now. So that was a blessing for the club in the sense that they were able to buy these talents a lot sooner than they previously thought that they could, but it just sped up the progress that the club needed to make, and Frank wasn't at that level yet. So I don't think it was naive back then, because I think because of COVID and because of, you know, our ability to spend and, you know, withstand the economic crisis that happened because our owner is filthy rich, no one could have foreseen that. And, you know, speeding up this process.
I'm saying it's naive. It's naive because you guys said it, you know, the club, the players and the manager are all on different pages. And that's what I'm saying is naive about this whole thing. You bring in Frank and you say, hey, we have a transfer ban. We have all these young players. Take this season. Do your thing. Develop them. Try and get as many of them as much playing time as you can. And Frank did a really good job last year. I mean, overwhelmingly, like he did much better than any of us expected. Yeah, he definitely did. And in a way, he's a victim of his own success, for sure. But I think it's naive of the club. You need to capitalize on the opportunity to buy Kai Havertz and Timo Werner. I'm not arguing that, okay?
Okay.
We had the transfer ban. We needed those players. But you're gonna go out and buy those players and try to squeeze them or shoehorn them into a team with a manager that you know can't do that.
How are you supposed to know that?
Yeah, how
he didn't he
did it with far less.
He only wanted Ziyech and Chilwell out of that whole list of players we bought. They didn't buy anybody he wanted. If they really trusted him, they get him Declan Rice and they get him Tarkowski. If they know he's that kind of man, no. It sounds stupid because it's James Tarkowski. I know, but those are the guys that Lampard wanted supposedly.
That's not what Andreas are saying though, Zach. We're saying
yeah.
Like when we brought those players in, even us, we thought that Frank would be able to get the best out of them. Yeah. Like at the time, has nothing to do with whether he wanted them or not. It's just that he could have done something with them, and he ended up not being able to get the best out of them. And
if every club out there wanted these guys, it's for a reason. And if Lampard can't, any coach that's a decent coach out there is like mouth watering at the chance to coach these guys. So I don't think that's. So if you, it's like, okay, so Zach, you ask me for an Xbox 360 in 2020, and I show up with an Xbox Series X. You're going to tell me you're going to be unhappy about that?
No, that's not the same thing,
honestly. Yeah, how is it not?
It is. It is, how is Zach. It, not? It is.
Markowski is a Premier League veteran.
We got Thiago Silva.
I'm not comparing them. Listen, no, I'm not comparing them as players, guys. My point is Frank went to them and told them, these are the guys I want, and they said, okay. And it gave them a completely different group of guys. And for the board to think that that's going to work, and for them to be all surprised and, oh, this is such a difficult decision for us, fuck that. I'm not buying any of it. They know exactly what kind of risk they were running when they bought the players that Lampard didn't want to get. I'm not saying that they should have bought James Tarkowski. That sounds fucking stupid coming out of my mouth. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if you have a manager that you really know and love and trust, you go and you get the players that he wants. That's what you do, especially if it's a long-term vision kind of thing.
But then you're telling me that you would have been okay with Conte getting Andy Carroll and Candreva when he was our manager. I loved
Andy Carroll.
Everybody Conte wanted, he made it work, didn't he?
What?
He wanted Romelu Lukaku. What is he doing with Lukaku over at Inter right now? Like, this is the thing. A manager like – that's a perfect example. A manager like Antonio Conte, who's a specialist, is going to come in. You know what system they're going to play. You know exactly what kind of players he's going to need. When he goes into the market and he asks for a player, he knows exactly how to use them. The only player I could think of in recent memory that Antonio Conte wanted and couldn't figure out was Christian Eriksen. For some reason, I have no idea why that didn't work out. I honestly thought it would. But even at Chelsea, he wanted Marcus Alonso came in. None of us had any idea who the fuck this guy was. And Conte made him look like the best. We were talking about him being the best left back in a Premier League at one point.
For like a week.
This is my thing. If you have a manager of that kind of quality, all of a sudden the transfers should get a little bit easier for you because you trust that guy and you know it's going to work. Like Pep Guardiola, what he does with his transfer business. He brought in Ruben Dias, and all of a sudden John Stones gets raised from the dead, and they have the best center back pairing in the Premier League. You know, but it's the guy that Pep wanted, and that's my point.
Yeah, but here's the difference. Pep has shown that he knows how to handpick players.
Yeah, of course.
So, again, this goes back to pedigree. Saying, This goes back to pedigree. Lampard doesn't have it. Lampard came from one season of no-name kids who are going to do whatever the hell he said at Derby, got him from sixth to sixth. Because he did do that. Then he comes and completely outperforms with Chelsea the first season, knowing he can't buy anything. Yes, Chelsea couldn't get Ziyech in January when he wanted. And no, they couldn't pull Werner out of Leipzig in January like he wanted.
No. He wanted Aubameyang. He didn't want Werner.
Werner and Aubameyang.
Aubameyang was his preferred choice in January because he wanted to leave Arsenal with that whole contract.
Let's be real. Arsenal going to sell to Chelsea Aubameyang? That's never going to happen.
No, it's a stupid request. So throw that away.
Ziyech should have been easier to achieve. But then again, Ajax always does pre-deals. They don't sell players mid-season. So again, what he wanted was almost impossible in January. And that comes back to the fact that he has no idea at this point in his career how to do that. He's not there yet. It's not – people always want to say, this isn't FIFA. Oh, sorry, Frank, this isn't FIFA. And again, I get it that you're saying like, oh, these are the players the manager wanted, but my goodness, like Tarkowski, really? Like, we're going to complain about we're really going to complain about Thiago Silva on a free right now?
Well, no, you know what's funny? Later on in that article, it says, like, when Frank found out that they actually got Thiago Silva, he came around to the idea. It's like, no, it's shit. Like, yeah. Really? It's kind of like me where I was like, I'll be the first person to admit, I was like, ooh, Thiago Silva. Like, it would be awesome for, you know, the one or two seasons, but I didn't want that long term. That wasn't my first choice. But when we got him, what was my mood? I was like, holy fuck, we got Thiago Silva. Yeah. And I think Frank had a similar reaction. But I think I think Frank's targets, the only ones that were mentioned in Tarkowski and Declan Rice, kind of spoke to, like, his vision in terms of how long and how much time he thinks he needs, because those are two young players that you're going to bring in. I mean, Tarkowski's not as young. But Tarkowski's a guy you bring in, and he's your center back for the next 4 or 5 years at his age.
Why are we talking all this trash about James Tarkowski like a few days after keeping a clean sheet against Liverpool? Come on,
no,
let's give him some credit, man.
He's not a shit player by any stretch. I'm just saying, it just seems like it was just a random name there. You know, the Declan Rice one, I was like, okay, I got that. You know, the Chelsea connection, 20 years old, captain of West Ham, whatever. Then Tarkowski was like, oh, that's a random one. I haven't even seen it linked with us. But I think those names being linked with us, or the fact that Frank wanted those guys, kind of showed that, you know, he wasn't necessarily looking to bolster the attack as much as he was looking to bolster the defense. I know he asked for Ziyech. I know he asked for another striker. But it looked like the defense was the first thing that he wanted to sort out before anything else, especially with the whole Kepa thing. He was pushing for a keeper from day one.
So, okay, so I'll ask you this. All right, he didn't get the players he wanted, but how about this? The board asked Eddie Newton to be part of the coaching staff, and it was Lampard's move to ostracize him outright. And then Eddie Newton said, all right, fuck this. I'll go back to just doing scouting stuff. Where's the defense there?
There is no defense there.
Okay.
I didn't get that. There is no defense. Eddie Newton, I mean, you can't find a speck of dust on the guy. He has a really good rap sheet. Why would you not want him around? I mean, the only argument, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, the only argument is the Shea Given argument. Frank wanted Shea Given to take up that spot, and the club was like, no, Eddie Newton's going to be that guy for you.
And Lampard should know that, though, that the board always has one guy in the staff, always. At one point, it was Steve Holland, then Cuccini, then Zola. Then, like, there's always been one guy that the board needs that's their guy.
I think the overarching theme of our whole conversation here, guys, is how ironic it is that we're surprised that Frank was kind of blind to the politics at Chelsea, or at least as it seemed. He just seems so blind to the politics.
After being there, like, he thought he was going to get special treatment to be like the Messiah that changes everything. Because
I wanted that so bad.
Because he is number one guy when you think Chelsea. Like, John Terry's captain, leader, legend. But I mean, I think you ask anyone and they'll say Lampard before Terry. If you just ask Chelsea player, go. Maybe even Drogba. But the point is, like, I think he came in. I think he's the naive one, not the board. Because at the end of the day, business-wise, the board, Lampard's two season and a half, at the end of the day, is a success. We navigated the transfer ban, promoted a bunch of academy players, signed a bunch of top-level potential players in the hall of players we brought this past summer. And now we are now the holy grail for any coach looking for work or looking to get into a better team.
Like, yeah, you don't even have to ask for transfers.
No, exactly, because all the players – because that's the other thing. Every coach before the Lampard signing was always like, oh, I need this style of player. I need this style of player. You literally have players that can hybrid into any style right now. We can run three at the back. We can run four at the back. We can run a double pivot. We can run three in the midfield. We can run two strikers. We can run one striker. Whoever comes next has it made. And I think at the end of the day – if we put our nostalgia aside for who Lampard is, Chelsea looks like a very desirable destination, and Lampard's time here was part of it. I think that Lampard's naivety comes in the fact that he thought good players can coach themselves. He thought that the board would treat him differently because he is a Chelsea man. And those things – oh, and the management of players – because during his time, he was surrounded by captains and men and tough heads, that that should be enough of an example for his current locker room to deal with tough times and not playing time. So those three things put together show me his naivety more so than the board, because again, the board's looking pretty right now. We look like a desirable destination. We're still in Champions League. COVID season craziness, we might still make top four. So that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying from like a business point of view, but I don't think the board is sitting too comfortably right now. I don't think you could confidently say that. The fan base is split right down the middle. I mean, at least from what I'm seeing, it seems like half of us are ostracizing the other half because we think the other half are all Frank out, and then the other half think we're all Frank in, and there just seems to be this huge divide that.
Well, I'm not trying to defend the board. Like, I'm not saying the board are geniuses. I'm just saying that in their job description and what they need to do in like a save my own ass kind of world, they are quote unquote the winners here.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I'm on the board's side.
No.
Again, they hired an inexperienced manager who happens to be a Chelsea legend. They're going to have to live with that.
Well, they also have the added benefit of knowing that this is probably as bad as it's going to get. Hopefully. Or this is as bad as it should get, I guess I should say. Sorry, Sam.
I want to say something about the board, too. I just thought the most interesting part of this whole article was the whole bit about Declan Rice and how the club was annoyed with his insistence of signing him because, you know, they had released him as an academy from the academy as a teenager. And, you know, the source told The Athletic, the hierarchy are very wary about the potential embarrassment of buying back an academy reject at huge expense. So they care about the optics, and that's, you know, like, that's, you see the same thing when they spent 70 mil on Kepa, and they're mad at Frank for not playing him, and instead of, you know, putting his arm around his shoulder and being supportive, and, you know, they want to save themselves from the embarrassment of buying this $70 million player that ends up being another bust. Like, I think they care a lot though, about their reputation. No, wait, how is it different? It would be an embarrassing buy.
But Thibaut strong-armed us into having no keeper at all with, like, days in the transfer window. Declan Rice, Chelsea decided not to extend Declan Rice. Kid walks away for free, and then you're looking to pay 80 million for him or 70 million. I mean,
it's not a direct parallel between the two situations, but the matter of the fact is they don't want to overpay for a player that they cut because it's embarrassing.
I don't buy that bullshit. Ever heard of David Luiz? Come on.
We sold David Luiz.
He scores on us and then flexes on our field after he knocks us out of the Champions League, and then we buy him back.
What's the price tag? Yeah, dude.
Net profit on that.
Yeah, like the Declan Rice deal is going to be somewhere around, what, 60, 70 mil probably?
I don't buy that. Declan Rice came to an agreement.
Deal be negative 60. David Luiz was a plus 20. Yeah, and it was multiple trophies along the way. I don't think you can compare that.
I think if a player is good enough, it doesn't matter what they cost or even if they play for the club or not. It doesn't matter.
Okay, but
I think too many people have Pogba PTSD.
Bro, I'm with you. I'm just saying, I believe it's that the club thought this. It's a weird thing to
get hung up on by the board. I agree.
I believe that because they do care about optics. Like, they wanted to make the Kepa thing work so bad, even though it was clear. Like, Frank playing Willy Caballero probably was the reason why we finished top four and made it to FA Cup final. Probably. 100%.
Coaching decision, believe it or not.
Yeah, and the board was upset with him for doing that. You know, like, they cared more about Kepa succeeding.
That's one thing I'm completely on Frank's side with, is the whole Kepa situation.
Yeah,
I want to find someone who isn't.
You got. no, but the thing that bothers me is that, like, you know, besides Peter Cech, the board aren't football people. So for them to be like, hey, we spent $70 million on this keeper, let's, you know, you should play him. Well, like, what if he sucks? Have you ever thought about that? What if he's not a very good goalkeeper? Like,
and I love how in the article they say Kepa was complaining that he wasn't getting enough tactical instructions from Frank. What instructions do you want? You're a keeper.
Your fucking feet on a free kick?
Yeah. Come on. I mean, that's not on Frank also to coach the – it's what's his name? Willie – it's not Willie Caballero. Who's our goalkeeper coach? No. Hilario.
Oh, hilarious. Yeah. No, that – listen, that Kepa situation was just so messy, but that's so self-inflicted on the board, completely self-inflicted. There's no defending them in any way, shape, or form on that one. Because it's like – it's different if we spent $70 million on Kepa and he was a really, really good goalkeeper, but he just had an attitude problem or he just couldn't get his head right or he couldn't stay healthy. Now we have a different conversation. But they have no argument. They have no argument whatsoever to make me think that the board has no fault in the Kepa situation. They have 100% liability in that. Absolutely nothing to do with Frank Lampard and absolutely nothing to do with Peter Cech. In fact, if anything, Peter Cech is the savior because he found a really good goalkeeper bargain at the very last minute before the window closed that potentially saved our season. Because if we still had Kepa as our number one goalkeeper, I don't care what manager is coming in, we're fucked.
Well, we actually did get a question. Since we're on the topic of like whether it was Frank's fault or the club's fault, we got a question from N Ward Nate on he actually asked this in our Discord. He asked, what percent is Frank's fault, what percent is the club's fault? I don't know. I for me personally, I think it's like 50-50. And to be honest, like, just during work, like while recording this podcast, like I'm like realizing a lot of different things and putting things together, just like hearing what you guys are saying and realizations that I'm making. Like, I really do think that like COVID had so much of an effect on both the acceleration of the process and just like Frank, you know, the difficulty in Frank trying to navigate that. So I'm going to go 50-50.
I agree, Sam. I'm going to go 50-52, and for the same reason as you. I think the environment, just amongst the fan base, but also in and around the club, would be a lot less toxic if there were fans in the stands, because we wouldn't have thrown Frank under the bus as quickly as we did. And when I say we, I mean, you know, like Chelsea fan base as a whole. No, 100%. 100%. Can you imagine? Remember when Jose got sacked? The snakes in the grass. I mean, that was – who did we play that day? Was it Southampton?
I have no idea.
I forgot. But like, I remember that day when we played, it was so toxic. And the fans were so angry. I feel like it would be like that, but just 10 times worse because it's Frank Lampard. But I feel like because there's no fans in the stands, it only accelerated the process, like Sam said. I feel like we would have had the opportunity to show our adoration and show how patient we're willing to be with him when the times got tough. Because the only times we were really with Frank was in the beginning when things were going good. And, you know, there really wasn't that much pressure besides playing the kids. And that also goes for our new signings as well. You know, the encouragement that the fans would have given Timo in the beginning, or Kai, you know, their first appearance, their first assist, their first goal, those all give a player a psychological boost. You have to think from that perspective as well. You know, it's hard to formulate a relationship with the fans in that respect, but I'm getting a little bit off topic. But yeah, I'm going to go 50-50. I think, you know, if the fans were there, it might have bought Frank a little bit more time. It might have boosted one or two of the performances. But ultimately, I don't really know if it would have changed the ultimate ending of, you know, the story. So
I'm still giving Frank 60% because at the end of the day, it's about results. And I'm sorry, we haven't even talked about that. He has the players to win games. We've lost a lot of winnable games. We drew against the West Brom side that had no business scoring 3 goals against us. We let Southampton back into a game that we had already put away, and they tied 3-3. Mm-hmm. I mean, the games have been there. They've been there for the taking. And that is completely on us because a lot of these guys have not had fantastic games. Even the Arsenal game was 3 lucky-ass goals. So
there again, was zero effort put into that Arsenal match.
And I'm still putting that on the manager.
Yeah,
motivation. And that comes to player management, tactics, etc. The players look lost. The Leicester game was by far one of the worst matches I've ever seen. So I think you still have to – like. Regardless of whether he didn't get the players he wanted or not, I still think he came out winning with the players he did get. And if you can't get a guy that scores 35 goals in the league in one season to even freaking score maybe just 2 in the past month and a half, that's wild to me. Kai Havertz, he had COVID. Maybe that one's a little harder. Our best attacker last season hasn't scored or assisted this year. Blizzard has 1 goal. The only guy that has been benefiting from his tactics is Giroud because he's a freaking ginormous human being. And if you cross it 50 times a game, he's going to score once. So again, I'm still leaning on Frank was just not ready for this job. And I don't think, again, he accepted a contract. It's not like Chelsea threw money and we signed a player and the player never wanted to come here. We just talked about Frank giving the club a discount and he wanted to be here. And so again, I think it leans a little bit harder there because I'm pretty sure I believe John Terry in an interview at one point said he wanted to earn his stripes before going to a club like Chelsea. And Lampard decided not to go that route. So I'm still leaning more Lampard than the board because, again, now we're looking at someone like Nagelsmann in the future maybe that would want to come here perhaps. Maybe I have my tinfoil hat here, but I'd say we're an upgrade on paper to Red Bull Leipzig, and we're an upgrade long-term because we have more financial power than they do. So at the end of the day, bigger coaches are going to be looking at this job thanks to a year and a half under Lampard. So I'm still going to give 60% of the blame to him.
So let's look ahead now. Like, I think we've vented enough about Frank if you guys are – and we can save some more for the future, but I want to talk about Thomas Tuchel. And so we play on Wednesday in 2 days against Wolves. So I just looked it up how I was talking about the quarantine thing, but apparently he can be at the ground for Wednesday. This is from Rob Harris from AP Sports. He says... he can be at the ground for Wednesday's match versus Wolves using a slight allowance for those flying into England to link up with an elite sports environment if he tests negative and isolates while away from training and games. Tuchel has to test negative before flying into England like every other passenger. Then he takes a Chelsea coronavirus test in England. If that's negative, he can be at training slash games but has to quarantine when he's not at the club until the standard 5-day test to release period ends. There is hope from Chelsea that Tuchel is at Stamford Bridge for the Wolves game on Wednesday. So the Tuchel era might begin as soon as Wednesday, which is like a little exciting for me. I don't know. I mean, I want to believe that what the board is saying is true, that all he needs, all Timo Werner and Kai Havertz needs is a manager who speaks their native tongue. And that's how it'll be the secret to unlocking their hidden talents. But it's going
to
be.
I feel like it's too soon to be excited.
It's my most anticipated match of the season, Zach. I want to see what it's going to look like.
So I'm telling you, man. I'm in my sweatpants. I look like a homeless person right now. I'm still in one of the 5 stages of grieving. I don't know which stage yet, but I just think it's too early to just be like. I don't know. It doesn't feel right.
So what, are you going to boycott the match? You're not going to watch it or what?
No. I'm 100% going to watch the match. No, look. I'm only messing with you. To a certain extent, I'm interested to see what kind of vision Tuchel has for the team. There's a lot of questions that do come in mind, of course, right? I think,
like, how good is his English, right? That's one of them.
First of all, yeah, because I really have no idea to explain those tactics. for those of you that don't know, Tuchel's not married or wedded to a specific system. He gives you a bunch of different looks. He plays three at the back, four at the back, two up top, three up top. He kind of gives you a little bit of everything. So, you know, I think that's the part I'm most excited for, is the fact that we don't really know what we're going to get. But at the same time, Sam, it's also terrifying, because I'm thinking of guys like Tammy Abraham, who just scored a hat trick. Is he going to be impacted by Tuchel coming in? Like, what if Tuchel comes in and only wants to play one up top? I think Tammy is going to be the guy that suffers because of it. You know, guys like Billy Gilmore, who should be getting more first team minutes, but, you know, are just getting to cut matches here and there. Are those guys ever going to get a chance in the league with Tuchel? Or is Tuchel going to lean on Kovacic's and the Jorginho's, the more experienced players? Like, those are the things I'm looking mostly at.
Is it the worst thing if doing that gets us to the top four?
No, it's not. And Tuchel's going to do what he has to do to get us to the top four. If he wants to rely on the trusty veteran players, then that's exactly what he's going to do. And he's going to do it unapologetically. And I think that's the thing here. This is a manager that's been around, you know, two top class dressing rooms now in Dortmund and Paris. But he's also been around big name players and big name personalities. So he's no stranger to making difficult decisions and having difficult conversations. So I think that's something a little different to what we're talking about with Lampard. I mean, that's one of our criticisms, right? Is that Lampard doesn't have these conversations enough. Like, the players really don't know where they stand. And I feel like with Thomas Tuchel, his experience is going to give the players a little bit more peace of mind, at least some of the fringe players. But in the beginning, I think there's definitely going to be he's going to ruffle some feathers for sure.
That was definitely the most surprising thing about Frank. I'm going to go back to this, sorry. But he it's not like he's out of touch with current players. He's been retired for only 5 years. Like, you know, the fact that that's the only thing that surprises me. The fact that he was not communicating with certain players, like, I don't know. These quotes come from the players that he didn't want to spend time with because they were probably gone. Or in a normal environment, they would have been gone. But due to COVID, they were around. So, never mind. I retract that statement. Frank was probably great at communicating with the players. I'm a Frank apologist now, all of a sudden. Like, I just snapped into it.
My question to you guys.
I don't care if he's talking to the players or not outside the field, but at least tactically, I don't think he's good communicating.
That was the least surprising part. He's definitely that's what I was saying in the beginning of the podcast. Like, he's talking to them. It's not like he's just ignoring them. I just don't think it's being communicated. Like, it's not sinking in. It's not seeping into their brain. It's not becoming instinctual.
Like, dude, the quote from the article is saying that, like, some players hadn't been talked to for months. Like, that's literally what it said. But the player is probably Marcus Alonso because of what happened, what he did during the West Brom match, and
that, you know, well, like, that's just unprofessional.
Yeah,
it's unprofessional from Frank for not making sure that the situation gets remedied and that it's just a non-issue. But the fact that Marcus Alonso just kind of did it and got away with it, I think that was the beginning of something, because you know, all the other players who were kind of unhappy with Frank are looking at it and are like, oh, fuck, I could get, you know, like, I can get away with this, you know, or it's kind of like, it's the mob mentality, you know. It's one person isn't going to do it, but if you get three or four guys that all agree, then all of a sudden they're going to make sure that you hear them. You know, it's one of those things. But my question to you guys is, obviously we still love Frank, and we're still, you know, with me personally, this hasn't tarnished any sort of like Chelsea legend or legendary status that he has. This doesn't tarnish it whatsoever.
No.
So with that being said, the fact that we're still going to be keeping track of his career and wishing him the best and whatnot, what's the next move for him? What do you think is the best move? I'm going to go first, and then I want to hear what you guys say or what you guys think. I don't think Frank should consider club coaching as his next job. I think he should go work with the England youth, like the U23 or the developmental teams.
Yeah, he was good with the youngins.
I think that would be not only good for England, because Frank just has a knack of working with those kids, but it'll also kind of give Frank the excitement and the joy of coaching again, because he will do a good job at that. Yeah, he will get some sort of success out of it and fulfillment. So I think that's the best move for Frank. But what do you guys think?
I love that idea. I really do. I think that's a great idea. I hadn't thought about it, but I think that would be the ideal situation for me as a fan, like, of Frank Lampard, and for him.
I wouldn't have to worry about him. Like, I exactly. really worry about him getting another Premier League job.
No, that's too soon.
I worry about that.
I think he needs to go the Steven Gerrard route and go to a team that's going to give him patience to prove himself, because I'm pretty sure Gerrard in his first season in Rangers was not very good.
No, he wasn't.
But now he's completely undefeated. Like, he has not lost a game and has taken over the Scottish Premier League ahead of Celtic. So if Lampard can be given maybe not a complete rebuild, but a team that just needs a spark, you know, maybe quote unquote an established championship side, if that's even a thing.
I was going to say like a championship side with money.
Yeah, something along those lines. And you bring in this Premier League legend, and he can maybe talk about the beauty of the Premier League, and that's how he gets his team to rally behind him. And then he gets to, you know, as he goes, people are going to be listening. The egos shouldn't be as big. And that's how he needs to learn to develop his own play style. I think that's the biggest weakness for Lampard right now, is that he has this vision of what he wants to do. And I think that he needs to kind of meet dream with reality halfway and learn how to get to point A to point B. And maybe if you can't get it to point B, you have to alter your plan and go to point C. And that's where I think the growth comes in as a coach. So for me, a championship side, not one that's looking for promotion, just one that's looking to improve in the first season. So that's what I'd like for Lampard, because I think he is going to be a good club coach. I just think, again, it's way too soon. It was way too soon. I mentioned this 2 years ago, that I thought that him coming to be a savior at this point of his career instead of earning it upon merit was going to be a mistake in the long run. And that season under the transfer ban maybe put my blue tinted shades for a while and think, oh no, he is ready. But this season, with a strong team, with the transfers coming in, and now an expectation to succeed, he couldn't quite cut it just yet. So for me, is go to a place that's going to give you just as much. They're not ready to win now. Go to a place like that, whether it's in England, whether it's in Scotland, whether it's in a different league in a different country, but go that route.
Guys, I have some bad news. I was on Twitter and I looked up, I wanted to see when his first presser was going to be. So I looked up Tuchel presser on Twitter, and the first tweet to pop up from Darren Lewis from the Mirror, March 17th, 2016. Oh, this is so bad. It says, Tuchel, unprompted, ends presser with comments about how much he loves Spurs and used to pretend to be a Spurs player when he played as a kid. What? I don't know what the context of this tweet is, but he needs to delete this tweet right now. This tweet needs to be deleted. Darren Lewis, I'm going to tweet you right now. You delete this tweet.
Oh my gosh.
Before anyone sees it.
I'm not going to think too much on that, because I think it was Isco in 2012 when he was at Malaga. You know, he had this breakout season and all the teams wanted him, and he was like, I will never, ever, ever wear the Madrid shirt. If there's another team in Spain that I would cheer for, it'd be Barcelona.
He named his dog Messi and plays for Real.
So yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna think too much on that.
Dude, who was but it? This was unprompted.
Wasn't Tammy an Arsenal fan apparently?
Yeah, he was.
Never. No, I don't believe
Yeah, Tammy. Tammy was an Arsenal fan. Yeah, no, if you look it up, there's lying. Past tweets. Yeah, I don't lying. Know. That one's kind of off.
But that's.
I do want to say this about Tuchel though. Andres, you talked about your foresight with like the whole Lampard signing and how you kind of had an inkling if it was going to go bad, it was going to go really, really bad. Mm-hmm. With Tuchel, it's really no different. The only difference is he doesn't have that legendary status at Chelsea, but he had falling out with the Dortmund board, and he had a falling out with the Paris board. So if anybody doesn't know much about Thomas Tuchel,
I have a rebuke to that.
Yeah, go for it.
Jurgen Klopp did too.
Mm-hmm.
Jurgen Klopp had a big fallout with the Dortmund board. They kicked him out. People were furious that because of one bad season, he got kicked out, ended up at Liverpool. So I don't know if, let's be real. The Dortmund board, they have this, maybe they just don't have the ambition these coaches do, because at the end of the day, Dortmund has stayed at the exact same place they were back when Klopp was there, through Tuchel to Marco Rose, through Julian Favre. These guys are trying to get to the next level. And what does Dortmund do?
Bring money in
and let's start over. They make money, but yeah, they're not just winning trophies. So forgive me as a manager who's trying to escalate my career and my players' careers for wanting to win trophies. And when you're not showing that same ambition, I'm going to get pissed at you. The PSG board.
What's now, that excuse?
Listen, when was the last time any manager won the Champions League with PSG?
The PSG has never won the Champions
League. Okay, we'll start from there. When was the last time any manager took them to the final?
Oh, not this argument, please.
Oh,
not this
how
argument.
Can I not say that? His PSG team performed better than Messi's Barcelona against Bayern Munich.
That's not saying much about Messi's Barcelona.
Yeah, Chelsea's our team played better.
The best Bayern side in probably history at the way they were playing. And you mean to tell me that I can't credit the manager for doing something about that?
You can give him a little bit of credit.
If Mbappe and Neymar weren't defending, I'll tell you that much.
But this is the thing with the Tuchel fanboys is that's the only argument. Give me another example.
Okay, I'll give you another example.
Of him overcoming the odds.
3-5-2, a 4-4-2, a 4-3-3. No matter what happens to injuries in Paris, he's found another way to play. And
know that, though.
Aside from when it went bad this at the beginning of this season, which we just apologized for COVID and all this other stuff for Frank. And who knows, Tuchel maybe didn't want to sell Thiago and the board did because he was old and whatnot. So yeah, you take away the captain of your team, the defense goes to shit, and you're telling me that was all Tuchel's fault? Like, I don't buy that either. So my point is, we can't discredit the man for something about arguing with a board, which PSG, come on, that the Sheikh Mansour, is that his name? Well, Sheikh Mansour, whatever his name is. Is not a footballing brain, and he is far worse than Abramovich about acting managers and whatnot. And then the Dortmund case, I'll give you other well thought of coaches that had the same issue. So for that to be, Tuchel's going to be a failure because of this and this. I mean,
no, that's not what I'm saying at all. All I'm saying is that this can be an issue, just like your foresight with Frank is. Oh, we might have pulled the trigger on this too early. Well. All of our past managers had falling out with the board. That is basically what happens before our managers get sacked, historically speaking. They have a falling out with the board, and then the sack comes.
I just don't think that we're even going to have Tuchel at the next season. So that's why I guess I'm not bothered
by it. I have faith.
I fully believe that Nagelsmann is the end goal. And worst case scenario, Tuchel performs, Nagelsmann doesn't want to leave Leipzig, and we stick to Tuchel for 18 months. Like, I don't think Tuchel is the manager for 10 years. I don't think that's ever in the picture. I think that he's probably okay for a caretaker position. And again, you mentioned he had a falling out with PSG. We need Tuchel as much as he needs us. He needs to prove that he can win with maybe a team that is in a competitive league.
There isn't gonna be a caretaker position for Tuchel. It's not cheap to hire and fire coaches.
Good thing that we're loaded. with a lot of oligarch Russian money.
The Roman's Empire.
Oh, 18 months. It's the only reason why it was 18 months is so that Tuchel.
And to be fair to Tuchel, I think if that happened, that would be doing him really dirty. Really dirty. Because there are a lot of clubs, to be fair to him. There are he's well sought after in Europe. Like he's one of the top – he was the top available guy, not just for us, but for all of the big clubs that are looking for managers. That's the best available guy.
Right.
So,
but we're the best option in his eyes too. He's like, damn, yeah. I can work with Timo. I can work with Kai. I can work with Mason Mount. I can work with Thiago again. I know that that's already a solid player. Like, we are just as desirable as he is. And that's why I think he takes the 18 months and shit, maybe he doesn't get to stay for 18 months, but he got to show that if he has some talent around the squad, he can perform maybe. And then he gets to go and coach a good team again.
It's a 6 month, as far as I'm concerned, it's a 6 month contract until he signs the extension in June. If he
signs the
extension.
That's how I see it. That's exactly how I see it. Because at the end of the day, we tried calling Leipzig to try to get Nagelsmann now, and they said no, because we would have to pay them at that point, and you can't, you know, he's under contract or whatever. Who says we can't call him again at the end of the summer? What if, you know, they crash out of the Champions League? And again, Leipzig, which much like Dortmund, is a cash machine and they need to sell players. That maybe also, he's like, screw that.
Yeah, but that also kind of scares me too. If I see something I like from Tuchel, I want to ride with it. I don't necessarily want to throw it out the window so we could go take a chance on another manager. That, to be fair, yes, we know Nagelsmann's rap sheet. We know, you know, how he's probably the next best thing. I can't think of another young manager that probably has the same, you know, accomplishments as him. But what I'm saying is, if we see something good from Tuchel, we stick with it, right? We have to.
Yes.
We're 100%. Chelsea, so I don't know. Because technically, we did fine under Benitez.
That's dangerous. See, for me, that's dangerous, and that could put us back even further. You know, you sack a manager midseason, you bring a new manager in, someone that's – I mean, to be fair to him, we don't really know how fluent he is in English. He could be completely fluent for all we know. But you bring a new manager in. Now you got to establish that chemistry. You got to, you know, put in a style of play, pick your players. That manager has their best 11. 6 months from now, all of a sudden we get a new manager. I just feel like that's kind of just – that's very dangerous.
You know, I mean, if it works, great.
None of us are complaining. But if it doesn't work, we're having this same exact conversation, you know, this time next year.
And again, 18 months doesn't mean that at the end of 18 months, Nagelsmann's still not there. Like, again, I don't think 18 months ties us up to Tuchel for the long term. I don't think it's also a bad thing if we sack him for a manager that would come in for the 5-year plan, per se, that Chelsea's willing to give. But
I don't know, man.
Yeah, Zach, hold on. Like, think about it this. Frank, last season, end of the season, after the restart, so well, like, we had no doubts that he was going to stay on another year. You know, like, going into it, we didn't know whether it was going to be a long-term thing, but the way it ended last season, we knew for sure he'd be back. And now we're halfway through, are we halfway through the season, and he's been sacked. So I'm playing devil's advocate right here from what you're saying. Like, yeah, you know, you're saying if he has a good rest of the season, there's no reason to sack him. Like, if Nagelsmann is your guy, you don't want to, like, start the next season, have Tuchel not perform, kind of like what Frank did this year, and then sack him halfway through the season and not have the opportunity to bring Nagelsmann over until the following year, you know? So I think if they are able to lock him down and they know that's their guy, then there is a possibility that even if we finish top four, that he doesn't get to continue being the manager.
At the end of the day, Roman Abramovich owns Chelsea.
I'm playing Roman's Empire. I'm playing devil's advocate.
But Roman owns the club. Until we have a brand new board, I'm sorry, but we're not magically going to change the fact that we have a quick trigger. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I was going to say about your five-year plan, though, Andres. Like, that just doesn't happen here.
Well, same thing with Tuchel. Then you're telling me that you want to give Tuchel all the time. Like, I think Tuchel, I think every manager now knows that while Roman Abramovich is here, you're always on the hot seat. And I'm sorry to fans that, you know, still think that there's going to be a coach here that stays 10 years in a row. But I've come to the not realization, but maybe just to the – just I've been beaten down so many times with the fact that I thought someone was going to be given time after a bad run that I just know now it's just not going to happen. Under Roman Abramovich, you either win and stay competitive or you're gone. I don't care if you're Jurgen Klopp. I don't care if you're Pep Guardiola. I don't care if you're, I don't know, Frank Lampard. I mean, who would have thought? Like, it's nobody's safe in this job. So people ask, oh, we need to give time to be able to do this. I'm sorry. Until Chelsea just stop winning when this sort of carousel continues, we're not going to get out of it. Simple as that. That the transfer ban, we still made top four. Sorry, we won the Europa League. Conte, FA Cup, and League Championship. At the end of the day, like, managers know the risk, but managers also end up benefiting and improving their resume. So while these top managers continue to take the job, and while Chelsea still hires these guys that end up continuing to win, we're not going to get out of it. So to think like, oh, Tuchel would never take this job or wouldn't take this job unless the 18 months are promised. Nah, come on. They know better than that. He just needs to perform today.
All right, I think we can go all day talking about this, but we should wrap this up. I just want to finish by saying, like, it's obvious that this could end in a disaster, but I am excited, and I'm going to be positive about it, like, honestly. Like, I really think that there is potential for, you know, just the fact that we have some change. We don't have to worry about, oh, will Frank be here? Will Frank not be here? He's gone. Like, we have to admit that now and accept that. And now that there's change, like, it could either be good change or bad change. So I'm just going to hope for the good, right?
Well, so I'm showing some tough love to our rep ultras. I like
no,
it.
I just, it was I just very don't want to be doom and gloom, bro. I just want to be positive. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I just want to be positive.
Yeah, no,
I completely understand. Yeah,
you have to be at this point. Like, we just lost a legend due to underperforming on the job. I mean, I think we need to tried our best to be positive about who's next. Like, otherwise, what's the fun in watching our favorite team? I'm trying to look at all the positives and maybe, you know, I'll be proven wrong and things don't go well, but I don't want to think that way because then I'm going to look for every little detail that went wrong and focus on that rather than focusing on the positives.
Yeah, if it's a disaster, we'll deal with it then. Right now, I'm going to be excited.
Psalm, I remember when Rafa got hired. Me and you were talking about it and we were both really pissed off because we both obviously hate Rafa, but the general consensus of our conversation from what I remember was, well, he's Chelsea's manager, so if we win, like, fuck it, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly where I am with Tuchel. I don't hate the guy. I don't necessarily like him. I'm not a fanboy of him. But I do respect what he did up to this point. And he's Chelsea's manager now. So as long as he's Chelsea's manager, I hope he racks up as many possible fucking wins as he can. And I hope he wins as many trophies as he can. And that kind of goes without saying.
No more nice comments about Tottenham either, please. Like, that, I was floored seeing that. Like, I can't believe I just saw that randomly.
I don't know what I'm more excited for, to see, like, Timo and Kai blow up or to see Tuchel sitting on his ice chest on the sideline. Pulisic too, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm talking about Tuchel's like sideline antics. You know how he sits on the cooler? That's like one of his moves, you know.
Oh, I cannot
He busts out the sweatsuits and the puffers. He's all about that too.
Way better than chewing on the cigarette butts, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
It's so charming.
to be kind of like honest, I thought Frank would be like more of a formal sideline manager. I thought he would show up in a suit and tie more because he's young. He's like a good looking guy. He's still in decent shape, right? I don't know. Maybe the stress of the job got to him, and he was just like, "Fuck it, I need sweatpants." Like, you know,
he's been just stress eating, dude. He's been stress eating. They have stress a stretchy eating. Waistband.
Yeah, I have
Arsenal fans that always call him Fat Frank to me, and it's like
I don't understand that joke. I've seen the memes on Twitter too, but I don't get it.
His cheeks are a little chubby. That's it.
It's a joke before. No, it's a joke because when he came to Chelsea, you know, a lot of people, because he was Harry Redknapp's nephew, they were like, "Oh, you know, he's a flop." And one of the things they threw at him was that he was fat and he was like kind of overweight because naturally he has wide hips. So that was like a big thing. But then once they saw him actually play, they kind of shut up about it.
Yeah, they changed it to funny, Fat like, Frank with a P, PH, Fat Frank. He's cool.
There was no fat – yeah, right? There was no Fat Frank jokes when Chelsea were winning games. There was no Fat Frank jokes last season. So
– I know.
Haters will hate some. That's just kind of how it is. But, I mean, that does wrap up this podcast. I mean, I think if we go any deeper into this, we're all just going to kind of be completely emotionally drained if we're not already. So for those of you listening, thank you. If you're not following us on Twitter, make sure you do at Romans Empire Pod. Same thing goes for our Instagram. Our handle is the same at Romans Empire Pod. Email address as well. We've gotten some emails in from a few of our listeners. So shout out to them. It's really great learning about you guys. So, you know, shoot us an email. Feel free to tell us how you became a Chelsea fan or your thoughts on the last match or hell, even your thoughts on Thomas Tuchel and the new hiring and firing. So, our email address is romansempirepod@gmail.com. And until next week, keep the blue flag flying high.